one of the most important voices to have come out of North Korea in recent years. Over 5 million people have viewed her TED Talk about her life in North Korea. She has given testimony about North Korean human rights in front of a special panel of the UN Security Council and spends most of her time speaking about North Korean human rights and North Korean refugee issues at leading universities and for international media. She has travelled all the way from South Korea for the UK launch of her memoir, The Girl with Seven Names, which will be sold at the end of tonight and is released officially tomorrow. I've read it. It's a really fantastic read, completely gripping, so I highly recommend. She's going to introduce herself briefly tonight, and she's going to tell you a little bit about her background. I'm then going to ask her some questions. However, knowing how much I think all of you will want to be asking questions too, I'm going to do quite a lengthy audience Q&A. For those of you who want to tweet about the event or post it on social media, the Asia House password for the Wi-Fi is SilkTiger63, and that's capital S and capital T. Anyway, without further ado, may you join me in welcoming Kyung-so tonight.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for coming here, and it's an honor to be speaking at the Asia House. It still feels strange for me to say this, but tomorrow I will publish a book about my life. I could have never imagined that would happen, but here I am. When I look back on my life, I sometimes wonder how I endured certain situations and difficult periods. It has been such an incredible journey, and I would like to share that part of the story with you this evening. I come from a country where human rights and freedom don't exist. The North Korean regime is the worst human rights violator in the world. As a North Korean, from the moment I was born, I was fed propaganda. And I viewed the Kim family dynasty and Kim Il-sung, Kim Jong-il, not only as our fearless protectors from the imperialist forces, but also as gods. Without free flow of information, the North Korean people had been completely brainwashed. And so I even believed such ridiculous things like the leaders don't go to the bathroom like humans, and they kill their enemies when they're 5 to 6 years old. So, and North Koreans are constantly inundated with anti-imperialist propaganda, especially against the Americans. We, from the kindergarten, we learned that Americans are our primary enemies who killed many innocent North Koreans during the Korean War and tortured. So we are not considered Americans as a normal human being, and they're the person we must kill them off. But so even today, we have rallies in North Korea where people chant anti-American slogans and children attack cardboard American soldiers and singing hateful songs about Americans. But on the other hand, we learned very nice things about British, that the British are gentlemen. After living in North Korea and learning about the truth about the outside world, I realized that the North Koreans Western propaganda at least half right. I mean, the British are gentlemen, but the Americans aren't bastards. I think the real bastards are in Pyongyang. Even people who know about the situation, I mean, who don't believe the regime, they can't completely express their feeling openly because the system makes us completely can't trust each other because we have many spies watching each other and many informants paid by the government. So I still remember that my mom told me many times, even when I was young, be careful what you are saying. When you are outside, don't repeat what you hear at home. So the words have ears and the fears have eyes. So I was at the time. Whenever she says that, you know, I tend to look at the world, and I believed maybe people can hear even through the words. So, if someone like made a mistake by saying wrong things, you know, entire family would be disappeared in the middle of the night. But at the time, I didn't know why people disappear in the middle of the night. Why not during the daytime? But actually, I found this answer very recently after I came to South Korea, because North Korean regime don't want people see those people disappearing during daytime. So they are on purpose taking them in the middle of the night, like 3 a.m. usually, when everybody's sleeping. So, well, one of my friend's fathers said simply to his best friend, this system is unfair. He only said these words and to his best friend, but he was sent to political prison camp while his family were forcibly relocated to desolate locations, mountainous areas where it is extremely difficult to survive. Because North Koreans are so scared of being sent to prison camp. Because especially we don't know what happened inside, but one thing we knew is if someone sent back inside, can't get out of there even after they die. So one of my distant relatives personally experienced this horrible fate. He came to North Korea during 1970s from China, who thought North Korea was going to be a communist utopia, as the North Korean regime's propaganda, but in 1980s, somehow he discovered that propaganda was not true, so he decided to cross back into to China again, but unfortunately he was caught by the border guards, and in the end, he was sent to political prison camp, and he was sentenced to 30 years at the time. And his son was only a baby at the time, and after he grew up, he visited the prison camp several times to see his father, but every time he was denied access. And his father never freed, and eventually his son even couldn't retrieve his body for a proper burial. And as a North Korean, from the moment, we all grew up with the constant public executions, and my first public execution was when I was 7 years old. I saw there's a man hanging by his neck from the railroad bridge. Since I was young at the time, so I didn't know what was considered a crime, but there's many people or executed. Those people are imprisoned for many absurd reasons, such as including fortune tellers, homosexuals, defectors, and religious people, and alleged South Korean spies, including a person who killed a cow. Many of you may be hard to understand how can person can be executed after killing a cow, but in North Korea, the cow is considered very important. The cow is belong to the government, not belong to the individual, because it's very useful in the farm, because we consider that the cows can work more 10 times than human being. That's why very important. And so in the market, we can easily see the pork selling on the table, but it's not easy to see beef. But only who have money we can buy under the table. That's the rare. That's why it's pretty serious in North Korea. And attendance was mandatory, and the people who saw the public execution were usually terrified. And we accepted the public execution as part of our life automatically, since we didn't know about anything about the concept of human rights, or we were even subjective of oppression. So the constant executions were reminder that I shouldn't do anything to disobey my government at the time. But the biggest killer in North Korea is starvation, which has killed more than 1 million people. But before the famine, I saw beggars and homeless people on the streets, But I didn't feel it was too strange to me because since we have a social hierarchy, and I thought those people was born with the homeless or just the beggars. I was naive at the time, so I thought just that they're unlucky, born with like that. But in 1995, when I visited my friend's family, I found the whole family had nothing to eat for lunch. But still, at the time, I didn't know why they don't have for lunch. I didn't know they were starving. It was strange to me. But a few months later, that I saw one letter that my mom brought from the company, from the co-worker's sister. It read, it was a whole family, five family members were dying, waiting to die on the floor. They were waiting to die together because they didn't have food for weeks. So at the time, it was really shocking to me. And for the first time, I realized people can die for starvation. I mean, I only realized people can die during war period, but at the time, for the first time, I realized that people can die for starvation, and the people I considered North Koreans the best in the world. We are the purest human being in the world. I believed, but they can die for starvation. It was really shocking for me. And then my most vivid memory from the famine was the year I left North Korea. I saw a woman lying on the ground while an emaciated child in her arms just stared helpless at his mother's face. So I was so sad, and I placed some money to the child's lap, but I knew it wouldn't last. At the time, during the famine, if someone carried a dead dog on the street, people look at the person very enviously because they wanted to eat the dog. But they didn't even look at the dead bodies on the street. If we go under the bridge or near the train station, we can easily see those dead bodies, and those bodies, they won't be moved. So the smells of decomposing bodies were everywhere, so making people feel sick and scared, giving them goosebumps as they passed. And my city was right next to the border with China, and we had many visitors every day to my city, so if we don't remove those bodies, it would be look shameful for North Korea. So we have a people whose only job is to get rid of those bodies, and they used hand carts during that time, and then they just stacked the bodies in piles. And one time there's a man who didn't die yet, but they put him among the dead bodies. It was the reality during the famine in North Korea. But I was at the time, still I didn't know that we were suffering because of our government failed system. As the government propaganda, we believed, you know, the reason we are suffering because of only American sanctions. So everybody blamed on America, but not to our government. But one time, actually my grandmother said very simply, she said, even during the Japanese colonial period, Korean people weren't suffering like this. But at the time, I didn't understand what was that meaning. But many years later, when I was living in China, actually, I understood what that meant. And since I lived right next to the border with China, and it was the only country I could compare with my own, and our television could pick up a few Chinese TV channels, and as I watched, I became overwhelmed with curiosity. I mean, living in North Korea, watching Chinese TV is illegal because it's banned severely by the North Korean regime. So every night, I blocked the window completely and just hiding in my room, just secretly I watched the TV. For the first time, I was so surprised that products can be advertised on TV publicly, like a beer, everything. While in North Korea, we have only one channel, and then every day, what I heard the most was Kim Il-sung and Kim Jong-il, the dear leader's name, and all the slogans, all propaganda words. That's all what I heard, but Chinese TV was fascinating to me. And then since the economically developed in my country, because I learned that North Korea was superior to China, but I had a perfect reason to thought the propaganda was maybe not true. So when I stood at the border and I simultaneously saw two walls, one eye saw the darkness of my homeland, while the other eye witnessed the bright, vibrant colors of the new world just across the river in China. The attraction and curiosity of the bigger world in the end made me to cross the border into China. But as a young, naive girl, I could have never imagined that I would be separated from my family for so long, nor could I have realized that I had to avoid the bright new world in China and live in the shadows. I was hunted by the Chinese authorities simply because I was a North Korean. And I was even caught by the Chinese police, and I was narrowly avoided being repatriated to North Korea by convincing them that I was a Chinese citizen. So due to all the dangers surrounding me, so I had to change my name constantly to protect my identity. So I became the girl Seven Names, which is the title of my memoir. And I had to overcome so many obstacles during that journey. So my life was like a roller coaster. I was able to deal with the stress and difficult periods, but one thing that for me could never handle was that being separated from my family. When I was living in North Korea, I was too young to give a gift, birthday gift to my parents. Although I received many gifts from my parents, but I never thanked them. Instead of thanking them, I thanked to the dictators posing as the leaders. So when I was living in China, I realized that, and I could have cooked for them or given them a gift, but by the time when I realized it was too late, there's no chance I can do that anymore. So this made me so guilty, and I never celebrate my birthday as a punishment to myself. So I hated my birthday, and even I didn't celebrate any holidays during that time. So those times were so painful to me. So still, it's hard for me to celebrate my birthday even today. I mean, nobody should ever have to be separated from the ones they love. Many people, I mean most people around the world might take their times with family and friends for granted. But as a defector, we are painfully aware of how precious the time together, the time is together. So because many North Korean defectors are separated their family forever. So this is it's an ongoing tragedy that we must end. I hope by sharing my story and my dream of peaceful unification, I hope I inspired some of you to get involved and to help bring the Korean people together again. Thank you so much for listening.
Okay, so now you can hear me. Well, that was just a brief snapshot and just how, you know, what an ordeal you've been through. And you know, one of the things that's fascinating about your book is that, you know, you call it the girl with seven names, but it could also be the girl with about seven lives. You're almost like a cat, actually, with nine lives, where you just keep on almost getting caught, almost everything being over, and then you manage to get through. And it's, I mean, I was reading it thinking, just completely gripped, and I had to pinch myself to remind myself that this wasn't fiction, this is actually non-fiction. So I want to know, you know, was it cathartic writing this book, or did it bring back all these bad memories?
Yeah, it's It wasn't easy to write a book because it brings all the bad memories. Because certainly some part I don't really want to mention, or I don't want to try to memorize the moments, but I had to do that to tell the story to the world. So I feel many times like I was naked myself. There's no secret to me at all. But the most difficult was like when I bring my family 2009 from China to South Korea, but in China near the border we had a severe situation with the border guards, I mean Chinese border guards. I mean we got the inspections from the border guards after the bus left within five minutes, which is a totally unexpected situation. So when I'm riding that part on the bus, the deal with the Chinese border guards, who's the aunt at the time. So just when I'm riding that part, it was really hard. I almost cried because I feel like I was at the moment exactly, which I don't want to remind in my life forever, you know. And then again, I felt how the precious time I have with my family right now, how I was lucky, you know. But yeah, those painful memories, it's really hard, yeah.
And during all these moments when you're in front of border guards and you're lying about your identity and they interrogate you a lot, how did you actually keep calm? Do you have some tricks?
Because surviving as a defector in China is not easy, and certainly I was in, you know, difficult situation. I was an illegal migrant in China, so I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. Especially, I was caught by the Chinese police one time after escape North Korea 3 years later. So after that, everything changed my life. So I couldn't make sure tomorrow when I woke up, maybe I'm safe still, maybe I'm in China, or maybe it could be repatriated to North Korea. So everything is uncertainty to me. So every time I lived prepared life myself, like if tomorrow happened this, what I could do, what I can do. So I just made tons of examples, case one, case two, example two, like that. So if I was questioned by the authority, what I had to lie all the time, I just prepared that kind of life. And also, maybe in certain situations, I need to prepare to escape immediately. I can't escape with everything in my house. So just in the certain spot, I put one bag every inside something emergency things. So when that situation, I can just take the bag only, just escape really just quickly. So always I lived in a prepared situation in my life. That's why.
And do you still have that attitude today? Because this book takes place over about 12 or 15 years. So you live in this state of flight, about to leave, having to lie for such a long time. Do you still have, you know, nightmares and get very nervous if you meet new people and they ask you about yourself?
Yeah, I mean, it's happy that my more than 10 years nightmare finished when I met my family, the moment when I met my family. Actually, I think it's so strange that I didn't have exactly the same dream over the more than 10 years. It's constantly. So it's a nightmare, you know, because I think I couldn't go back to North Korea in my life. That's why in my dream, always I'm visiting there. So that was a really painful memory, but it was disappeared the moment we gathered together, my family. But yeah, still, after that, I have another nightmare because my situation right now changed. I became public, so I need to be careful with spies. Especially living in South Korea is a little bit dangerous. I mean, even defector friend I can't trust, who can be maybe appeared one day suddenly spies. Actually, it happened. There's a 2 years ago, huge case that defector was considered as a Russian spy, but he was my best friend. And I can't meet him. I don't know if he's a real spy or not. I don't care if he's a real spy or not, but I mean, maybe the other defectors maybe I knew, maybe he can be appeared the same like that. So yeah, so it's hard for me to can't meet people freely. But I can only communicate with them through SNS is the most safe for me. And then, yeah, that's another hard part that can't trust people right now.
And when you meet people and you say you're from North Korea, I think everyone will be very, very interested in that. Are there common assumptions you feel that people have about North Korea that are not correct?
Yeah, I definitely want to mention about this. I mean, North Korea is over the time, it is changed, but some people told me many times that North Korea, they pretended that North Korea has changed hugely, a lot. And there's no people right now dying for starvation, you know, completely changed or something. I mean, those people, they tend to prepare with Pyongyang, which is Pyongyang is not North Korea, that's the Heavenly Kingdom. The Pyongyang map is completely different. We can't see, you know, Pyongyang as North Korea. You need to see the other part of North Korea. I mean, so people always say that North Korea changed, but what did they really change? The major problem didn't change even today. My point is that dictators still exist. Kim family still ruling the country, and then people have no access to information about the outside, and then the human rights situation didn't improve at all inside North Korea, and then people, you know, can't leave the country, and then still there's many major problems just didn't solve right now. Only superficial changes like a phone system they adopted or technology way or something in fashion. But yeah, people they're not dying that much compared to the famine period, but still they are dying right now for starving. So even I have a video in my computer right now, it was taken 2014, which is last year from my hometown. There's a lot of beggars in the market, which is nothing really changed what I saw. So yeah, my point is, it is changed in some way, but the major problem didn't change at all. That's what I want people know.
With this video, how did you get hold of this video?
Because I'm also involved in helping North Korean defectors to leaving the country. So there's a pastor who's been doing this work more than 15 years, so he's considered very expert about this. So I'm helping him to get defectors escape the country, so that's why he also gave me the videos, let me know what's happening in North Korea. So exactly, the South Korean media really want to buy the videos from him, so all the videos that provided in South Korea is most 90% is came from him. That's why I know what's going on inside right now.
Obviously, as you say, there's a lot of terrible things that happen in North Korea. And I know in your book, you only get united with your family right at the end. And they're the one thing that you really, really miss about North Korea. Is there anything else that you still today miss?
Yeah, I miss everything. I mean, because I'm North Korean. Although I'm living in South Korea, my identity changed over the time, many times, but still, I don't feel sometimes, even today, I don't feel it's real, it's me. Like, I don't know, because I've been living several different lives still, but my memories stopped when I was 17 years ago, and when I was 17 years, and then before I crossed the border, that was me all the time. So, which means I miss everything in North Korea. I mean, I don't hate North Korea, I hate the regime, but people tend to forget there's tons of innocent people are suffering under the dictators, not only nuclears or missiles or the, you know, military in North Korea, but there's many innocent people which my family members are living in there. So I miss everything, air, their soil, everything. So even at the border, the river that I was standing every day to stare at the China, but I even miss the moment, you know, because I can't have in my life, so.
This is quite a different question, but this was a bit that was quite a small bit in the book, but was just so interesting, I think. You mentioned that your brother, when he was living in North Korea, was dating a very beautiful girl called Yoon Ji.
Yeah.
And that she had been asked to join the Dear Leaders Joy Division. So, could you please explain what the Dear Leaders Joy Division is?
Yeah, as a North Korean, we know, we don't know what's, it's really privileged if someone chosen by the Joy, squad team, but we don't know what they're doing exactly after chosen that team, but it's so uncommon. So every year from Pyongyang, there's a people come to the everywhere in North Korea, every high school or something, they're searching for the very beautiful girls. So usually they are searching for when they are in high school, right before graduate high school. So like in my high school, there's only one girl chose for that because it should be really beautiful. And then they even measure, there's a three grounds for pass the test. So the first ground, what they're doing is they're measuring their height and every length, they measuring the arms, legs, so even they count in few years later, in 2 years later, how long they can grow up, something like that kind of measure. And then even here, how should be perfect, even they check the nipple. Really, it's really serious. We didn't know why they do that kind of things. But many of them failed in the third round. And then who went to the second round is a quite unusual situation. Many very small percent of girls chosen to pass the second round. And then who got chosen the very last round means they go to Pyongyang at the time. Very small percent of girls chosen at the time. And then the very last round in Pyongyang, what they're doing is the government is taking all of their history record, like if they have a good, hierarchy, since we have a hierarchy system in North Korea, so if they came from whether good Chuseon Sungbun or something bad family background, so it depends on that. But sometimes, it's a very unusual situation. Some very young girl, like when they are 3 or 4 years old, they can choose as the beauty. So which means those girls are protected entire their life until sent to Pyongyang. So the government are controlling or protecting them all the time until graduate high school. So those girls they shouldn't have any scar. Until high school, if they have scars in their body, they can't choose as beauty at the time. So it's very severe. But because people don't know what they're doing after choose the beauty. That's why it's so privileged if someone chose for the team. So I still remember that one girl in my school, which is my friend, best friend's sister, she was chosen every year. But every year she got failed because of she's height, not tall enough. So she was really beautiful. And then her mom, I still remember, her mom felt so exhausted, frustrated that her daughter didn't choose because of the height. So she gave her every day cooked beans because she believed certain beans can make her grow fast. But yeah, she never grow. And then, so in the end, she told me when I was living in China, I saw her, she married with a military officer, and then she's right now bus conductor or something. Yes, her job is bus conductor right now in North Korea.
So these girls in the Joy Division, they're going to Pyongyang to be the girlfriend of one of a Kim?
Yes.
And so the mothers are feeding them beans so that they grow tall. But what do the girls think? Do the girls want to go to Pyongyang? Is this considered a massive privilege?
Of course, they don't know. They don't know they're serving Kim Jong-il. Certainly, nobody knew about that. Because even those girls who was chosen previously, after the serving period finished, they can't go back to home. Never. Because then once they went back home, means there's no more secret. So the government have to keep secret. So even after finishing serving that period, they are keeping those girls in certain areas. So they can't communicate with even their family. So which means when their daughter chosen for the beauty or squad, which means they had to give up in their life forever. So they gave up to see their daughters, but still people feel so privileged to do that, willing to do that.
Wow. Well, on the note of Kim, I want you to tell the audience a bit about your memories and your experience of the day that Kim Il-sung died in 1994. You know, what was the atmosphere like?
I still remember that moment because as a North Korean, I think it's a really shocking moment in the history. As a normal day, I went to school, but my teacher said, you have to go home quickly for the lunch and then you have to turn on the TV, just forcing us to watch TV. And we said, I mean, it's an unusual situation. In North Korea, we don't have TV daytime. I mean, there's no TV program, only it starts during weekdays from 5 p.m. or 4 p.m. like that. So certainly lunchtime, we don't have TV at all. I mean, but the teacher said, you have to. So I went home and then I turned TV and then actually, there was TV, there's the anchor just appeared on the TV, and it was surprising. Yeah. And then the famous anchor called Lee Chun-hee, she was there, and then she was sobbing on the TV, and then she just declared about the Kim Il-sung's death. And then my friend who was next to me, she was crying severely, but I didn't cry at all. I feel like shocked. I mean, how can the God could die? So I couldn't imagine that what I heard is true. But actually, after I came to Seoul Spirit, which is many years ago, among the defected community, we used to share the story together. And then what I realized, actually, in North Korea at the time, many people don't have TV. They don't have TV. So many people heard about the Kim Il-sung's death through the friends, through the people. And then they said, when they hear, I thought they said, those people are crazy, they are lying, you know, they didn't really believe it like me. And then from that time, you know, the funeral event very longer than I expected. And then it was summer, and then it was July, it was so hot, and then we needed to gather in the stadium every day. And we had to stand in for hours. And I feel that everyone was crying in there. But it was too hot, and standing there for a long time, I feel so tired, it's exhausted, almost I was going to faint. So I couldn't have even crying at the time. But somehow, I realized at the moment, while other people crying, if I don't cry, I will be in a huge trouble. Maybe I can be sent to prison. Nobody told me, you have to cry. If you don't cry, you will go to prison. Nobody told me. But as North Korean, I think, just when I was 14 at the time, just automatically, instinctively, I learned from myself, I guess. So I just faked crying with the, yeah, I just did. And then that's why teacher thought I was severely crying. And then even she put me inside the ambulance at the time. But but later, because I think many people at the time cry really severely. I mean, more than 90 people was sincerely and seriously they cried. But after Kim Jong-il died, it's a change because also it looks very sincere in North Korean. People are crying at the time when Kim Jong-il died. But I mean, over the time, North Koreans' loyalty are getting less during the famine. So, I mean, but people is pretending during Kim Jong-il's funeral, like me, you know, they knew if they don't do that something, they will be in huge trouble. Because what I remember was exactly after the funeral, we have rallies in school, and then some of the students had a huge problem in publicly because they didn't cry. So the principal of school criticized hugely. But students is okay at least, but it happened to the company, to the others, and some people really sent to prison with that problem. And then, yeah.
Well, I'm just going to ask one final last question, just bringing up on that. I mean, in 2011, I remember, I'm sure everyone here remembers seeing Kim Jong-il dying, and the exact same scenes of hysteria in these big open public squares. And you would have seen that from living in China, I'm guessing?
No, in Korea.
In Korea. And What did you think? Did you think people were also fake crying, or do you think he was more popular than Kim Il-sung?
No, he's not popular. I mean, because many North Koreans believe that because of Kim Il-sung, people tend to respect Kim Il-sung more than Kim Jong-il, because when Kim Jong-il's period, we have a big famine. But people always, like my mom, believes at least during the Kim Jong-il, Kim Il-sung period, they had a good life, and they believed even they had a better life compared to South Korea during 1970s or 60s. So that's why they really treat Kim Il-sung as a hero. And then, but Kim Jong-il, they not respected them, but still it's a respect, but not like compared to Kim Il-sung. So as I said in the previous answer, that people faking more, but people can't show that in front of camera. They know how to survive in North Korea. They survive in fear, they have to pretend, so, yeah.
Well, thanks so much for that. I'm gonna open it up to the audience now. What I would say is, can you please make sure that you just stick to one question and make questions short and very concise? So we're gonna have a mic going round.
Thank you so much for that. Fascinating. I'd like to ask, how long do you think the regime is going to go on for like this?
I hope they finish tomorrow, but it's hard to guess, but I think they are certainly in stable situation right now at the Kim Jong-un regime. But still, at the same time, I think he's doing pretty well than we also were expected. So I don't know when the regime can end, but I believe that there's another world switch with Kim Jong-un, which I hope for that. Because in Kim Jong-un regime, I can't hope for everything, because after Kim Jong-un took power, I hoped better change, because since he studied overseas in Switzerland, but after he took power over, the regime and the country became more severe in certain parts. So I don't have any hope for him, but yeah, for the next time, yeah.
I'd like to ask you a question, please, about the PDS system, public distribution system. I guess that you were living in Pyongyang between 1992 and 1994. Was your family receiving PDS rations? And if so, what was the number of grams per person that you were receiving?
Actually, my mom was one of the officials who was arranging the public distribution system for nationwide. And then, yeah, I don't know exactly per person how much, because my family, we didn't rely on the rational, the distribution system. It's like for us, like just a symbol, but we didn't really rely on that. But it disappeared right after Kim Il-sung died. Kim Il-sung died in 1994, but the ration system completely stopped in 1995. Since then, yeah, just the people had to survive by themselves.
Question at the back.
Really quick, Tina, because a lot of people want to ask questions. There was a documentary on North Korea, and they managed to get into a hospital. But when they got into the hospital, there were no people, there were no patients there. Can you account for that? Do you know why that is?
Yeah, because actually the one of the reasons that I was so proud being born in North Korea was the free medical system, because we learned that in the capitalism country like South Korea or America, people don't have money, so they can't go to the hospital, and the people dying in front of a hospital. That's what we learned. But actually later I realized North Korean people were dying in front of a hospital because the hospital has no medicine inside, and then the doctors skill, they're pretty low quality in North Korea. So because there's from UN, whatever, the UNICEF, if they provide those medicines that don't go to hospital directly, that goes to all the black markets. So that's why the hospital has no peers, and then people who's sick, they have to buy the medicines by themselves, and they have to bring to the hospital. But it's not also easy to go to the hospital. You have to give them a bribe to the doctors. And so that's why in the black market, there's more common fake medicines were there. So people don't know how to verify between the real or fake. So that caused another side effect. That's why in hospital, there's no people. So it's just the only in the house.
What I wanted to ask you was that the present dictator, the young man, does he take these decisions himself, or is there a sort of group of people who are advising him? For instance, I mean, during this, his short reign, so to speak, he got rid of his uncle, and the commander who advised him when he was killed by anti-aircraft fire and things like that, although his widow is very close to the dictator. Now, what is actually happening? Is he taking these decisions himself, or is there a number of people there who are actually telling him what to do?
I'm not with him exactly next to him, so I can't make correct answer, but in my guess, I think he can't make decision by himself since he has no any experience, so he's listening with he's discussing with other people. That's my thoughts. Also, I mean, there's also what I knew from the source, and some people, even in the party, some people want to change, reform, but some people strongly against that. So yeah, that's the reality in North Korea right now.
Thank you for sharing. Thank you for sharing with us. I would prefer not propaganda, but the truth of what's happening on the planet and to fellow human beings. To that end, it's wonderful that your book has been published. What is the story of the writing of the book? Did you write it and then find a publisher, or did you have a publisher and an agent? What is the story of the writing of the book?
Normally, publishing book first need to write the draft, right? But my situation is that I was lucky, completely, it's different situation. I just, without any draft, first my publisher HarperCollins want to sign. They believed my story, so I signed the contract first, and then they hired the co-writer to me. So I met the writer during 6 months, every day, so I just told him my story. So that's why we made the one book together.
Thank you. One here.
We had one at the back from a while back.
Yeah, hi. I was just wondering North Korea is ever going to be free. Where is it going to come from? Because I think you have the Chinese on one side, who are probably Chinese government, who wouldn't really stick their neck out too much and get rid of the Kim family. And then the other side, you have the Americans American government back in South Korea, who are making money through surveillance and military equipment. So perhaps a coup from within, or maybe your book can reach a wider audience where more people get involved beyond China, beyond America. Can you comment on that?
What was your question? Sorry, my understanding
wasn't
that great.
Well, I don't see where North Korea is going to be free one day.
North Korea.
Because how is it going to become a democracy? Is it going to come from within? Because I don't think the Americans are going to push from the South Korean side, and I don't think the Chinese are going to push.
Yeah.
So maybe your book can reach a wider audience where people, come from, from help from Europe or someplace else.
My point is, we have many obstacles for the unification, as you said, with one side is America, one side is China, but if the two Koreas really willing to have unification, I think nobody can stop from happening. But what I see right now is certainly North Korea doesn't want to have unification. And then also, I'm a little skeptical, even South Koreans, because of young generations in South Korea, they don't certainly want to have unification because of the economy cost. And then there's many obstacles about unification. That's why we have a problem. But my point is, if we really want to have, it will happen one day, if the two countries really want.
The question is about how you learn Chinese. Was it because you were in a border city? Did you learn in school, or did you learn from television?
In North Korea, we have a curriculum. We don't teach Chinese, but they have a Chinese character, which is an old character. It uses in Taiwan or Hong Kong like that. But I don't know. My father told me when I was living in China, encouraged me to study, you know, foreign language. So I thought he was insane at the time. I don't know what can I use for that in the future in North Korea. But somehow because of it, he just told me many times. So actually my Chinese character writing in my school was very high. The score was the top in my school. But many years later, I didn't know it would help me a lot in my life. After I escaped to China, it was much easier to learning Chinese. Especially writing Chinese is difficult compared to other factors. It became a little bit easier. And at that time, I felt, wow, thank you to my father, actually, yeah.
And actually, that's one of the things that saved you initially, knowing how to write the characters and read them when they interrogated you. I've brought another gripping bit in the book. Lots of questions all around. So I think we're going to go for the man at the back. Sorry to make you run around on such a hot day.
Thank you. I guess it's a timely question given what you just said about your time in China. And my question is, what's your personal opinion of the Chinese government and their policy of refoulement with regards to North Korean refugees? And I guess you've essentially said your opinion and perspective of the North Korean government, but you haven't really commented on the Chinese government, as it were, and their role that they play.
I was certainly a victim as a North Korean defector in China because, Chinese government always trying to come to North Korean defectors because maybe they could be ignored that. I mean, when I was living in China, there's a term, every 3 months, they are hunting for Russian defectors nationwide, especially near the border area, like Shenyang, Harbin, Yanji, those areas. So, they are considered North Koreans as an illegal economic defector. They are not considered as a political refugee, but which is, we are from different country. We are from dictator's country, so we are political refugee, but Chinese government, they don't want to accept it because China and North Korea has a very good relationship. We called for that like a friendship, a blood tied friendship. That's why they do that. And then even, you know, the Chinese border area, they set up a huge barrier to not let defectors cross into the China. But yeah, it's okay, I understand for that. But at least, you know, I really want to ask for Chinese government right now that North Korean defectors, when they come to South Korea, many defectors want to come to South Korea. Not, they don't want to stay in China, but they have to get to China because they can't cross directly to South Korea through the border. So I want to ask them, at least let them freely cross the country, whether they go to Thailand or Cambodia or Mongol, you know. So let them cross freely. Don't hold catch for them, and then don't repatriate to them to North Korea. That's really what I want to ask for, but yeah, it's really difficult to change.
Yeah. I'm going to take just 3 more questions, but we will have afterwards drinks and a book signing, so you will get a chance to ask her your question. But yeah, just aware of the time and also how hot I think everyone is. So if we take a question from this side, this lady.
Hi. There have been warnings recently that North Korea is facing the worst drought in possibly 100 years. how worried were you when you heard about that?
Sorry, could you explain again?
Sorry. There have been warnings in the last week or two that North Korea is facing the worst drought in 100 years. I just wondered how worried you were about that.
Well,
what sort of impact?
Yes. You mean drought, right?
Drought.
Yes. Sorry for my understanding. But yeah, I also knew about that. As I mentioned, that I'm working with one pastor who's working in San Rosario directly. So he also showed me the current pictures about North Korea, about the drought. And then, yeah, as a North Korean, I'm so sad to see that. Then maybe, I mean, even in North Korea right now, people guess maybe they might have another, you know, famine, which I don't really want to have. But this is what most North Korean people inside right now concerning about that, because of the droughts. So yeah, it's a really serious situation right now in North Korea. And yeah, actually, not many people can guess about that. But you just found it. Yeah.
Would you be able to tell us what you understand from freedom, and among the countries that you have lived, in which country did you feel, according to your definition, free?
Free. I think every country to me free, as long as, if not North Korea. I mean, many countries have a different standard of freedom. I mean, China has seen many problems compared to South Korea or America. But to me, it meant a lot of freedom compared to North Korea. At least, you know, you can freely travel between provinces without any travel permission, even in China. In North Korea, so we can't travel even between cities without the travel permission. Just that we don't have any freedom in North Korea. We don't have freedom of press, speech, religious, you know, movement, nothing we don't have. So, I mean, every country around the world so far, I've been in many countries, and it's all free to me. Yeah, so.
When you defected, were you worried about your family and whether they would be a trial of association?
Did
everyone hear that, by the way? I'm not sure if everyone heard that.
But I understand that families could be tried in association for something that you would have done.
As I wrote in my book, I didn't meant initially to escape the country because I was too naive at the time. I have curiosity about the outside world, but it didn't mean I want to completely escape the country at the time. So yeah, as she said, you know, many defectors are escaping the country for searching for food, whatever. But my situation is I didn't want to escape the country initially, but just I wanted to find out the answer because of the outside information, like Chinese TV changed my mind. But because I didn't know I would not come back to North Korea. That's why I didn't worry about my family at the time. But and then even at the time, I didn't know actually by leaving the country how much problem I can cause to my family. That's why later, make sure I couldn't go back to the North Korea later. So my family immediately, they moved the house to the different area, and then they reported to the government that I was missing. But at that time, already many people left the country, so the government, they not believing it was missing. They believed that I was defected. So, which means many people, family members can banish to the countryside, which is happening even today. So my family always, every year, they just bribe to the authorities with huge money to, my family was on the list, the banishing list. On the banish list every year, so to remove the on the list, we have to pay every big money every year, because from Pyongyang, there's a certain team to searching for that, especially to the border areas during the crackdown period. So we have to do that every year, So in 1995, we had a very severe problem at the time. So I feel so sick, I wanted to end the problem. Otherwise, it's never ending. That's why I took huge risk by bringing my family to guide them into freedom. Yeah.
I think we're going to have to end there. That's a really good note to end on as well, since obviously getting your family out is kind of what the book all leads towards. I want to thank you so much for coming tonight, especially on this hot night. And as said, we do have drinks and a book signing at the back, and you will be able to ask some more questions, but please do let Hyunsoo get into the other room. I want to, on behalf of our CEO, Michael Lawrence, I want to thank you again, and also to thank Hyunsoo for telling us her amazing story.
Thank you so much.